elder beings burp too. On the bright side, Kanye West has said that he wants to run for president.
Oh, I saw that. Every so often, because I don't get the news any other way other than just when I accidentally stumble upon it on Twitter. And it's just like, can it really be worse than fucking Trump?
I mean, it can't. But somehow the thought of a Kardashian being in the White House as First Lady just... I want to throw myself in an active volcano.
Yes, it does make me want to commit seppuku, not because of my own shame, but just kind of the worldly shame that rests upon my shoulders like a heavy-weighted blanket that we have not yet bought ourselves from our Patreon money.
But need to.
But we need to do that, because that was one of our goals and we haven't got there yet.
And I still need something comforting to cry beneath. I think just what I'm never going to get over is the fact that I can't remember which Kardashian it was. Kylie Jenner?
What's the thing with the Jenners and the Kardashians? I don't understand any of it. I don't care. Anyway, sorry, what were you saying?
Who was on track to become the youngest billionaire. And poor people, schmucks like us, were giving her money to help her be the youngest billionaire.
Oh,
and
no. That's oh, why? Just...
My soul vomited. And it's still vomiting.
Oh... Now I'm very sad. Everything's awful forever.
I'm Philippa Evans, and I guess at least I'm not a Kardashian.
I'm Jessica Byrne, and I wish I was, because then I'd be fucking rich. And I want that desperately.
Guys, I'm nearly super rich, and I would like your money to help me get there. Thank you.
Can we? I mean, isn't that basically what we do in the workhouse? Aggressive. What's that? You know, there's like the two kinds of advertising where one is like subliminal, where it's sort of like in the background, you know, kind of like in a movie where there's, you know what I mean? Do you know what I mean?
Product placement.
Yeah, it's like product placement. There's that kind of advertising. And then there's the other end of the spectrum where it's me yelling at you until you give me money. I need it right now.
We promise that when we're disgustingly rich, we'll stop asking for it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. By then we'll be... I don't know. Where's the line, Philippa? I think we're always going to ask. There's always going to be a new thing on the horizon. Capitalism. But, you know, until that time, I think what we should do is just get some awful Victorian jobs. Segway.
I already have an awful Victorian job.
Yes. So here's the thing. You have an awful Victorian job, but now hear me out. Mm-hmm. These ones are very bad.
Hear me out. My one is very bad.
This is very, very, very bad. And yours is very, 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 very bad. But this is like advertisement to you that these jobs, you could go and do these maybe instead of the horrible job that you have.
It's a matter of varies, really.
That's right. How many very, very bads are you willing to go to? Because I do believe that in this world, there are two kinds of people. There's the people who don't like their jobs and the liars.
Apparently, most people don't enjoy their jobs. And yeah. That just, it saddens me.
You clearly don't have any of these jobs, which sound amazing and great.
Okay.
And wonderful.
Excuse me. It's the coal mines that I've been... toiling in.
Oh, only the coal mines. You sad fool.
You 5-year-old.
You 5-year-old kneecapless chimney sweep. But generally, no one really likes their job, which is why all of us are trying to monetize our hobbies. Because please save me from this hideous, hideous toil in this job that I hate. While Kardashians, who are so rich, just get money because... full stop.
I hate 5/7 of my life. Mm-hmm. Please just pay me to tell you about Roman penises.
Your job may be bad, but with the spirit of everything is awful forever, at least you don't have these jobs from the Victorian period. And how these mad jobs kind of came about in the first place was because of the Industrial Revolution in Britain, which kind of changed the face of working Britain very quickly and drastically in a measure that hadn't really been seen before. And so because of how swift it was, and there were so many new styles of jobs and an explosion of technology came along with it, came a lot of new challenges, chief of which was keeping everything clean. But in the simplest terms, it was because of the invention of the steam engine. So there were new techniques for farming, and steam machines allowed for greater production of food, which of course fuels a greater population because they can eat more and fuck more. It's easier to gather food, so you spend more time fucking. So there was a population growth because of the steam engine. And much of Britain at the time was rural and kind of agrarian type. Machines could replace a huge amount of human labor that was needed for food gathering. And also it was cheaper. So it was kind of harder to make a living as a farmer. So all these people now were kind of like displaced and had nowhere else to go. As before the invention of the steam engine, many factories, or manufactories as they were called in the beginning, which I like, manufactories, they had to be built on the banks of fast-flowing rivers because they were mostly powered by water power, like water wheels and things. But steam engines meant that more factories could be built anywhere, like in the middle of cities. And also, technology in the steam engine opened up the possibilities for what we know well, mass production of things. So needing a huge, huge, huge workforce to run it. So basically, all of that kind of culminated in more jobs in the city, less jobs in the countryside, funneled huge amounts of people into factories and into cities, which meant massive problems of overcrowding and dirty surroundings. So all these new jobs had to come about to kind of handle that, or at least just to survive.
Do you mean like cleaners?
Oh, Philippa, you naive baby child thinking that there's just cleaners. So Manchester is actually a really good example of the exceptionally quick change a city underwent in only 30 years. In 1773, Manchester was a kind of like a market town with a population of 27,000. So businessmen began building factories in the town because of Manchester's large population, and also it was close to a lot of local coal mines, coal deposits. So coal was used to power a lot of the steam engines. So by 1802, Manchester had 52 textile factories, and the population had grown to 95,000. Imagine in like 30 years, suddenly there's 95,000 folk around.
Oh, and I think it's bad in Edinburgh when it gets slightly more crowded around Fest.
I know. Oh,
and then you're like, the population has doubled and these people are walking slowly, and can I push people into traffic? I don't know.
It's usually me. I'm normally really day drunk going, what are we gonna go see now? Just stumbling into people who are rolling their eyes trying to get to work.
Did the population double, or am I seeing double? I can't tell
anymore. I'm so drunk always. I'm such a lovable scamp. A pickled jester is what I am. So James P. K. Shuttleworth, too many names, was a doctor in Manchester in 1832, and he said, frequently the inspectors found two or more families crowded into one small house, and often one family lived in a damp cellar where 12 or 16 persons were crowded. Children are ill-fed, dirty, ill-clothed, exposed to cold and neglect, and in consequence, more than one half of the offspring die before they have completed their fifth year. The strongest survive, but the same causes which destroy the weakest impair the vigour of the more robust, and hence the children of our manufacturing population are proverbially pale and sallow.
I can't remember what I was reading when I came across this. I think it must have been the soot research. There was such a lot of concern that the English were becoming this stunted, golem-like people, and they were like, what's happening to the poor? They're just popping out these shriveled little...
these little golems, like...
Give me food. The degeneracy of the English race was on everyone's lips at the time.
Because I love the different stereotypes of how people imagine Britain. I think even to this day, because some people either think we're like, you know, the posh Colin Firths and the Benedict Cumberbatches swanning around all posh with ridiculous names, and we all live in Downton Abbey. And then on the other side, there's the, and I just get penny for your 1,000 feet. And we all like swim. We all sweep chimneys and are this dirty, soot encrusted bog goblin.
When really it's both, it's Colin Firth looking at the shriveled being before him going, get away from me, you.
Benedict Cumberbatch, you look disgusting. Get back in the mines.
Benedict Cumberbatch going,
here's my American accent. I am Doctor Strange. Benedict Cumberbatch, stop that. You're doing it wrong. Get back in the mines.
Back to the shadows. Sorry, Benedict Cumberbatch. This episode is sponsored by Colin Firth.
So, another visitor to Manchester, Alexis de Tocqueville, was a French aristocrat who visited the city in 1835. Now, this is going to be the section of the podcast that I call Let's Shit on Manchester for a Little Bit. So, let's shit on Manchester for a little bit.
Let's.
A sort of black smoke... I was going to do that with a French accent. I'm not going to. A sort of black smoke covers the city. The sun seen through it is a disc without rays. That's just called the we're cloudy all the time, though. Calm down.
That's just brutal.
Under this half daylight, 300,000 human beings are ceaselessly at work. From this foul drain, the greatest stream of human industry flows out to fertilize the whole world. From this filthy sewer, pure gold flows. Here, humanity attains its most complete development and its most brutish. Here, civilization works its miracles, and civilized man is turned back almost into a savage.
Ooh, I like it.
So basically, it's dirty, but we make good shit. But the people are gross, but the things we make are good. So we've got cramped conditions, we've got pollution, we've got too many people crammed into a tiny space that kind of wasn't really dealt, you know, meant to handle it. We've never really had that kind of thing before. All of this serves to create more death, more disease, more illness, and more people still coming in and scrambling to make a living. But to make sure that they are living and to try new practices in hygiene or anything they can to make some fucking cash up in this bitch. So this is the group of jobs that I like to call the scavengers.
Ooh.
And this first job of the scavengers we have is a leech collector.
Oh, I want to do that already.
Yeah, well, I think every time I say one of these jobs, you're going to want to do it. But
probably.
Some of them as well, I'm going to ask you what you think they're going to be. But leech collector is it's on the tin. It's right there. Collect leeches. Yeah. So bloodletting was thought to be a kind of cure for almost anything around in that time period. It's a popular treatment for those poor bedlamites. And, you know, you just got to suck the crazy out of you.
Menstrual blood as well, I think.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
She's got too much. It's going to her brain. Apply the leeches, Mildred.
Yeah, I was reading a list about everything that it was there. Oh, everything that you could put leeches on you for. And it was literally just kind of everything. So a sickness was also stampeding through the newly overcrowded cities. Demand for leeches. Because, yeah, everyone needed a leech at some point because everyone had a disease and so everyone needed a leech. So what are you going to do? Go get those leeches. Where do you even get leeches from?
The swamp?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, cool.
And what you'd have to do is these poor women, mostly women, and I also do mean poor because it was such a shitty job that the lowest of the lowest society were the ones having to do it, which is, of course, was women. So women would go and pull up their dresses, wade bare-legged into, like, dirty, boggy, swampy water in hopes of attracting leeches to their supple female flesh. And once their legs and flesh were absolutely covered in parasitic slugs, they would then wade out to remove them. But a leech usually falls off on its own once it's satiated with its dark desire for blood. It's really fucking awful, isn't it? But this can take up to 20 minutes to an hour. But it's best not to try and remove the leech yourself because in the effort, like some people thought, you know, like burning them off a little bit or salting them or make them let go. But they can do that, but then they could regurgitate their stomach contents out into the wound and cause a horrible infection. So it's best to just let it be.
I've also known people who've had to pull leeches off of them after going swimming in lakes in South Africa.
No.
Don't go to South Africa. And apparently it's quite hard to remove them.
Yeah, they don't like it. They want to be there. And they, I was looking at pictures and they've got this weird, because they've got these three little teeth mark things. So it's this horrible, like, triangle little, like, oh, it's awful. I'll show you pictures. We'll tweet them if I remember. There was also a worry that a leech could burrow its way into your flesh.
Oh.
Such as in one instance in 1835, the doctor noted that he had been called to help a girl whose thigh was tense, red and shining, enlarged to nearly twice its natural size and extremely painful, quote. He found nothing wrong, but when he finally made an incision, he discovered clots of blood and pus, which he then drained and emptied into a bowl and, quote, on emptying the matter from the ball on a clean flag outside the door, the girl's mother was surprised to find among it a leech, coiled up and quite alive and moving actively. Yes. On inquiring minutely into the history of the case, he, the doctor, found that some days before she first complained of the limb, she had been gathering watercresses in a ditch, and she felt hurt in or about the ankle of the inflamed limb, but did not pay much attention to it at the time. On examining the ankle, he found a triangular cicatrix. I don't know what that means, but I like the word. He found a triangular cicatrix, such as that which might be produced by a leech bite. The fact would seem to prove such that animals can enter, burrow in, and preserve their vitality in the soft part of the human body. So I hope you don't like sleeping ever, or going to bed at night and feeling secure and safe and comfortable.
Even if you go wading in a lake and you're like, yeah, it's fine, there's no leeches on me, but there could be leeches inside you.
It could be in you right now. And also the leech women could suffer from diseases that were just carried from just the general dirtiness of the swampy water, and also from excessive blood loss. By letting a leech get fat and happy enough to need to go into a food coma nap before it lets go.
I was gonna ask, I have no idea how much blood a single leech sucks, but regardless, it's not a single leech. Like, you're coming out of there with your oozing, writhing legs moving with the gooey flesh of a million leeches.
Yeah, it's like a beard of bees, but it's on your leg and it's leeches.
Ew.
Yes. Oh, that's some really lovely trousers you got there, Mildred. Yep. Yes.
And you just know that as each one comes off, it goes...
Yep. I think it goes... as well as it like plops down all fat and gross.
So you're right, I don't want this job. To be fair, I do have to deal with complaints. But...
you do have a leech of a different kind, am I right? No one's around to high five me. I hate COVID. So you don't want this job.
I'll wait for the next.
I've got a different job for you, and this job is a bone grubber. What do you think a bone grubber may be?
All right, I'm going to give this my best guess.
Remember, it's in the scavenger category.
Grubbing for bones?
Yes.
So I'm going to guess that they went hunting for skeletons of anything to give to, like, butchers or tanners or something like that.
You're pretty damn close. Basically, ooh, it does kind of that, yeah. Not much to say about it. A bone grubber would collect bones, animal, human if they could. Ooh.
Oh.
And sell them to bone mills, where they would be ground up and used for things like soap and other products. Because after listening to this, I urge you to Google what parts of a cow make it into everyday products that we all use to this day. And why it's almost impossible to be a true vegan unless you're just making your own fucking things. Because cow parts and cow enzymes are in everything. Like medicine, cosmetics, shampoo and conditioner, chewing gum, deodorant. Everything. These bone grubbers would go about, get bones, sell them to mills to be ground up for soap.
Sounds better than the leech gatherers.
That one's not so bad. I mean, you have to walk around like picking up carcasses and shit, and maybe the things haven't rotten off the whole way, so you have to go and rot them. So it's not exactly nice, but at least it wasn't very diseasey.
Fighting grave robbers for skeletons.
Fighting off Birkenhair, kicking them in the nards to try and get your hands on some bones.
I mean, don't we do it anyway?
Us, yeah. Yeah, we do it for the love of it, though, you know.
I'm not parting with my fucking skeleton.
That's a passion. That's a passion bone finding.
Monetize your hobby.
So this next group of scavengers has a lovely title of a pure finder. Oh. What's a pure finder, Philippa?
I'm guessing you don't have, like, a dowsing rod for virgins.
No. In Britain? in Manchester? You're joking.
A pure finder. I have no idea.
Okay. So deeper into the city, people are in more cramped conditions away from the countryside to be once knew and loved. But as we now know, human history is entwined deeply with the history of the dog.
Oh.
We've always had our doggy friends with us. And Victorian megacities were no different. Up until the 1970s, in fact, Britain's dogs were just kind of like let out. And you just go to work, you would just let out your dog and off they go. And then they would just come back at night. And these dogs would sometimes form little packs during the day, have little, like, cool, cute adventures.
Oh, doggy club.
Yeah, my mum told me about how they used to do this with their dog, too, and how he used to, like, know the neighbourhood packs that would form. And you'd get to know them. But off these dogs were going up, shitting everywhere. Someone's got to clean that up. And also the dogs would bite people and things like that. And also because parasites linked to dog shit, like roundworms, have been linked to causing blindness in children. So that's why we stopped having dogs being let out, kind of the blindness thing, because, you know, that ain't right. But the dog shit is what the pure is.
Oh.
Yeah. The pure is dog shit. Because it at first it wasn't litter picking to keep the cities clean. No. It was actually sold to tanners to be used in leather making. Yeah. So dog poop was known as pure because it was used to purify leather and make it more flexible. I've seen this done on, you know, those videos of like how fast fashion is kind of destroying the world and they kind of like show you all these slaves that they have in Bangladesh making this stuff. I remember seeing like a video of that, of like, and a lot of them, they use like bird poop and they put them in these like vats and like they get people to like stand on them, almost like grape crushing, but you're standing in bird shit and things like that. I think it must be like that. It's something that makes the leather more supple and treats it. Yeah, so pure was used to purify the leather, make it more flexible. And leather was in huge demand in Victorian times because it was kind of all you really had. It was used for tack for horses, and it was used for shoes and boots and bags and book binding, but not yet cool as fuck jackets. That wouldn't come around until like the 50s or something. So pure finders would roam the streets finding the lairs of the biggest, meanest dog packs and then going around and picking up their shit and chucking it in a bucket. Also, today, dog food kind of helps in keeping dog poop as inoffensive as possible. Like, sometimes it even reduces odor and makes it so it comes out in a easily picked up lump, if you can believe it. But imagine the nasty plop of dogs just eating fucking street garbage and cats and scraps or whatever they had back then.
Neighborhood children.
Yeah, just eating all the orphans that no one gave a shit about. But some of the pure finders as well wore a black glove to protect them from the scooping hand, but others considered it harder to keep the glove clean than a hand.
Oh.
And so they eschewed that particular protection altogether.
Oh.
So how do you feel about being a pure finder? You're not into it?
I'll stick with the bone grubber for now.
You work outdoors, though, and you choose your own hours.
And there's dogs involved. I mean, isn't that the dream?
Puppies everywhere. Yeah.
Ooh, I wonder if they just proactively kept packs.
I'd imagine you would, right? Oh, but then you'd have to feed them.
Fair enough.
And I think if you're picking up shit for a living, you couldn't afford a dog.
You can't afford fancy niblets for your hounds.
No. So this next one is either a tosher or a tosher. I'm not sure which one I hate more.
It sounds like that's poop related.
I submit to you, the dogs are smarter than people because a dog has never stepped in a human shit. Because human shit is a whole other different matter.
Oh my god, is a tosher to do with human poop?
It is.
Oh, I was so right about that.
You're really on the ball on this thing. So yes, the next in the scavengers are the toshers. Victorian London had a massive labyrinth of overworked sewers under the city. And the toshers, they weren't collecting the human waste. No, it's not as gross as that, Philip. It's
were they looking for baubles?
They were.
Oh,
you see, they
gross.
Made their living sifting through the human soup in the deep dark of the sewers by candlelight to try and find any valuables that might have washed down there.
I mean, what did they hope? That someone had swallowed their wedding ring?
Yeah, pretty much.
Fair enough.
Or like they just dropped it down the drain, or I don't know.
Whatever Victorian people do. Or that a skeleton died in the sewers and had gold teeth. Maybe, who knows?
Yeah, or like this pirate booty washed down there.
That's where I'd hide my booty.
In the sewer?
Inside literal shit, yes.
It was extremely dangerous work. Because noxious fumes formed deadly pockets and could sometimes explode.
Oh, take your canary into the poop mines.
Yeah, into the poops. And the tunnels as well frequently crumbled. There were swarms of rats not above biting any living flesh, like in the game Dishonored. And at any moment, the sluices may open and a fucking tidal wave of filthy water might come and wash the toshers away.
Oh, what if that gets in your mouth?
Oh, what if you die? Because a tidal wave of shit drowns you.
What if it gets in your eye and you blink and now you got poop inside?
Now you got poop eye. So Toshis tended to work in groups, help keep each other safe. You know, one can be on rat duty, kicking away the rats. And they also wore as much protection as they could in, like, canvas trousers with huge amount of pockets so that they can store their sewer treasures. They carried a large, kind of like a hoe-like thing. It was like a huge pole so that they could push away the more offensively large fudge dragons, but also to help, like, steady themselves if they slipped.
All right, Jess, you've talked me into it. You can be the rat fighter. And
okay, great.
I'll be the pole poker.
You be the pole, the polio, and I'll be the rat kicker. Cool. I love it. Although there is a slight problem, because after 1840, it became illegal to enter sewers without permission.
Well, that's just mean.
But, as we all know, that doesn't stop Brits from doing a thing, as evidenced by how we keep doing all the COVID things wrong. I don't want us all to die. But I also really do want to go to a pub. So instead, the Toshis began working late at night or early in the morning to sneak about in their dark desire of sifting through human shit. So despite these stinking and dangerous conditions even, it was a lucrative business for the working classes, with many a coin or a silver spoon sloshing about down there. I think, like, you want to, like, hang around the houses of the rich to see if any of the human effluence that rushes down there is from rich people, because they might have gold parts in there. I don't know. So you've given up being a bone grubber and you're thinking about being a Tosha?
Considering it.
Okay, but how about being a mudlark?
Now, mudlark sounds familiar.
Mm?
Because I'm sure I read about it in a Terry Pratchett novel.
Oh yeah, it's very Ankh-Morpork. Yeah, very, very Ankh-Morpork kind, because it is water adjacent.
I don't know.
So a mudlark is the best name ever for a thing, for a start. But they were kind of similar to Toshas, but with the disease-riddled soup that they chose to wade through for tiny pieces of treasure and stuff was on the filth-encrusted banks of the River Thames or the River Irwell of Manchester.
I don't know if I have a beer burp or if I actually want to vomit at this stage.
Maybe I should have content warned that this one was going to be real gross.
Too late now!
Whoops, you're here already. You're still here after the whole leech in a girl's thigh? All right, it's gonna get worse. Mudlarkers were actually considered a class below Toshis, if you can fucking believe it.
How bad was the Thames?
Oh, worse than the sewer, apparently. But the mudlarkers were usually children, and they collected anything that could be sold. So it was like rags for making paper, driftwood, which could be dried to make firewood, and any coins or treasure that might find its way down to the river. Not only was it filthy, but it was also dangerous. Again, I think, like, all of these things are not only that, but it was dangerous is the tagline for every single one of these jobs. Since the tidal nature of the Thames meant that it was kind of easy for children to be washed away or become stuck in the mud and drown. There's not really much else to say about the mudlarking. It was just gross and bad, and people hated them.
Pretty much walking on the river, it was so poop encrusted at that stage.
That's right. And then you would, like, fall through, like, a little river pothole.
Ooh, gross!
Ooh, bad times. So, the one last batch of the scavenger jobs I have is the workhouse.
Oh, are our orphans mudlarking, or...?
Now, I think we should be mudlarking on the orphans, because I think we need to make more money on the orphans. So I think we need to dig around in the filth accumulated beneath them to see if we find any good orphan treasures.
Orphan treasures?
You know, see what they're holding out on us. I don't know.
Start shaking them for loose teeth. Who knows? Sell their bones to whoever bone grubbers contact.
Yeah, that's right. But so I think if we're, you know, bone grubbing and you're toshering around underneath the orphans, I've got a nasty rumor for you if you're willing to hear it.
Jess, am I ever not willing to hear malicious rumor mongering?
Did you hear about the notorious Ruth Kemp?
Do tell.
Mmm. Well, rumor has it that she joined one of the best jobs that has been around since the Tudor era, known as a nightman. So called because by law it only could be done at night, skulking around all dressed in black under the cover of darkness. The nightman would collect the night soil, by which I mean Ruth would skulk around at night, emptying the cesspools and the outhouses of the city. Only, I hear, she made a little extra money on the side of that by taking it to the tanners and selling it to them as buckets of pure. How very entrepreneurial, you sneaky shit peddler, Ruth.
You have me going back and forth, back and forth. At first I was like, nightman, that sounds like the kind of job you'd wear black velvet for. Now I'm not so sure.
Are you also nightman? Fight to interrupt the day, man. Jumping up the sun. Oh no, it's the other way around.
Nightman.
Ah. Anyway. Thank you for your patronage, Ruth Kemp. Thank you very, very much. It means a hell of a lot. I hope you love our new episodes. We did it for you, Ruth. I hope you like them and everyone else, and you can enjoy all our backlog of episodes. And if anybody else wants to become a nightman, then you can join our Patreon at awfulforeverpodcast.com/patreon.com.
We promise to sing nonstop at you using the gross hero name of your choice.
That's right.
Premature ejaculation man, I'm coming.
So I haven't found any orphan treasures, so I'm very angry and I'm going to whip all of them later, but for now I think I'll just leave.
With a disappointed air.
Yeah.
We're not angry, we're just disappointed.
No, I'm also angry and I'm gonna flick my hair and harumph out.
Harumph.
Harumph. So that's it for us scavengers. The rest of the poorest needed to make their way by making things or using hard physical labor. Cleaning things. As with many things, when you find out how difficult and dangerous it is to make something, it's horrifying.
We make a podcast, and that's very difficult and dangerous.
It's difficult and dangerous. People don't know how dangerous it is. My back is sore. I have a sore back. And my voice is tired. Philippa?
I got a numb arm for like a week.
You did, yeah.
I could have lost that limb.
Oh, yeah. Good times. Things are a lot harder to do than you think they are. You just think, that, there's a million of those, but it's actually really hard to make. And then you're like, why is this thing not more expensive? And then you realize, like, oh yeah, because of manufacturing, and also the slaves in Pakistan or China has mass-produced it, and we don't care about them. So here's matchsticks. They were made in Britain. Matchsticks. They are made by cutting wood into thin, thin sticks and then dipping the ends into white phosphorus, which is a highly toxic chemical. And in the Victorian era, this work was mainly performed by teenage girls who worked in terrible conditions. Of course, everything here is terrible conditions. It's the Victorian era. Often between like 12 and 16 hours a day with almost no breaks. So the girls were forced to eat at their workstations as well, meaning that the toxic phosphorus got into their food, leading some to develop the dreadful condition known as fossy jaw.
Oh, that sounds sexy.
It's not sexy at all. This nickname was given by the matchmakers to the particularly nasty condition, phosphorus necrosis of the jaw. A bit like the radium girls, it would cause the jawbone to rot. When doctors soon began treating these women for the disease, would often spread to the brain, leading to a particularly nasty, painful, and horrific death unless the jaw was removed.
Okay, but hear me out.
Yes?
Women talk too much.
Oh.
And they don't really use their brains, so...
Okay, it's fine. You're right. And we need matches because everything is... You know, whale oil lamps. So we need loads of matches all the time. So it's a sacrifice I'm willing to make.
I need to smoke my man cigars.
And we need matches to do it.
Not gonna light themselves.
No, phosphorus was needed for that strike anywhere type match. And I'm not gonna strike. I strike my match where I damn well fucking please. And I'm not gonna have some little strip of, like, chemical safely Tell me where I can strike my match. Philippa, is this Britain or not? Do we have an empire, or do we have to strike our matches where the man tells us to? No!
Don't tell me to mildly inconvenience myself so that you can have a jawbone.
I'm literally never going to do that. Pass me my cigar. So how do you feel about being a matchmaker? Are you still a Tosha or are you a matchmaker?
It's a tough one, Jess, because I do like talking.
So this one, I think this one might sway you. It is a sin eater.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God. Yes. Okay, yes. Yes.
You're a sin eater.
Yes.
You don't even know what it is yet, but you're like, yes,
I
yes,
don't
yes.
care.
I want to be a sin eater. It is pretty good. So what would happen? A loved one would die. And the first thing that you would do is take the loved one's body, lay them down on a table and place a bread roll on their chest. And then you would hire your local professional who would come over and dine upon the food that was laid upon the deceased's chest in hopes that the meal would have absorbed all of their worldly sins so that the sin eater may take their sins into their own soul and that the dead guy would be fine because bread is very absorbent.
Let me eat your soul as toast.
I don't yet have the Doom voice, but I'll try harder.
We need one of those things.
Men. Men
no.
with their deep voices.
Philippa, I don't need no man.
It's your sin.
Sorry, Philippa, editing this later.
Yeah, you're going to have to lower the volume on that particular part. The sin eater would take those sins upon themselves after eating the sin-soaked meal that was on top of the dead body, carrying with them the sins of countless people over the sin meals in which they have dined.
Yes.
So
yes.
It
yes.
didn't pay that much.
That's fine, I do it for free.
And it was only kind of for the truly desperate that couldn't wait for their rewards in the afterlife and instead kind of needed to eat actual food like right now, because mostly it was like the really poor who couldn't afford it because, you know, most people still really Christian around this time and they kind of cared about their souls. So it's like, die or have your soul badened forever, but eat a bread.
Small-term gratification over long-term reward is what I'm saying.
That's all I'm what I'm about, baby.
I'm very chronically gluten-free, so this sounds fantastic to me.
So once apparently the sin eater did die, probably because of all the corpse meals they've been eating, the sins actually would be absolved. So everybody wins.
So did they get ostracized by society then if they were like extra, extra sinful?
They were like, yeah, because they like absorbed all the fucking evil of everybody.
I love that.
Especially like he ate the meal, the chest of Pedophile Joe.
Pedophile Joe!
Ah!
Oh, I would do that job for nothing. I would do it for toast, which is what I'd get.
This next one is called a funeral mute.
This sounds almost as good as sin eater.
Yeah, I feel like I'm ramping them up in coolness as I go. So funeral mute, after the sin eating is done, it's time to embark on the extremely lucrative but complicated funeral business of Victorian London.
Funeral mute as in M-U-T-E or funeral
yes.
mute as in M-O-O-T?
No, mute as in M-U-T-E. Yeah. So I don't give a shit about the actual good jobs, like actually running a successful and very lucrative and very needed a lot funeral service.
For all those children below the age of 5, yes.
That's right. I want bad, weird jobs like funeral mute. Anyone familiar with Charles Dickens's Oliver Twist may remember. I'm exceptionally familiar with it, are you, Philippa? I mean, I've read Great Expectations, but that's the only one. It wasn't as good as I thought it was going to be, but I'm... obligatory. Anyway, one of the orphans hated their early job, which was as a mute for the undertaker, Mr. Sowerberry. So these young lads are required to dress all in black with a sash, which is also usually black, but sometimes white for children, while carrying a long cloth-covered stick and standing mournfully, silently.
Ooh.
At the door of the deceased's house before leading the coffin on its processional route to the graveyard. By the middle of the 18th century, having two mutes became popular, you know, for symmetry, and they would just like walk solemnly around and just be silent and sad. Are you still a sin eater or are you funeral mute? I think there's not a lot of death, so I feel like you could probably do both.
I know, like, could I eat the sin toast and then stand sadly outside.
Sin toast is something that we can put in our eventual cookbook we're going to make.
On the one page, it will be unicorn toast, which is still my ultimate thing. But on the next page,
sin toast.
Sin toast.
Kill your family. I mean, what?
So yeah, moonlighting is both. That sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
But this next job, you could be a knocker-up.
You're just making that up at this stage.
No, I'm not. This is real. You could be a knocker-up. Do you want to be a knocker-up? What do you think a knocker-up is?
I mean, I know what I want to say, which is the obvious thing.
Is there, you know, you're shagging loads, right?
You literally knock-er-up. Yep.
Like you're a human stud stallion or something.
But I feel that we're talking about malnourished orphans, so...
Oh, you better believe we're talking about malnourished orphans.
I know there was a job where somebody would wake up the factory workers in the morning. Is it that one?
That's right. Ding, ding, ding. You get the prize. The prize is sin toast. Eat the dead man's bread. So without any mechanical alarm clocks and all the thousands of factory workers, they needed to be roused to trudge their death marches over to the dark, unventilated, cramped work environments. So people often worked in shifts as well, which is a kind of a new thing for this time period, and at times needed to get to work on time. You'd hire a knocker-up or knocker-upper, and they would walk around the streets with really long poles and tap on the windows of their customers to wake them up.
Aww.
And some were inventive as well, used pea shooters to like knock on the little like pew 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 at their windows. Some just chucked rocks because fuck it, get the fuck up. Chucking a rock.
Can I tell you a sad story?
Please tell me a sad story, always. This is the podcast. This podcast's tagline is, can I tell you a sad story?
I once downloaded an app that was supposed to, it listened to your breathing at night.
Oh yeah, I've done that.
And when it hears your breathing become more shallow, you're in your shallowest sleep stage, I don't know, but it starts ringing the alarm clock then because it's waking you up when you're ready to be woken up.
Yeah.
And what would happen to me is I'd wake up in the morning, but I'd think, oh, fuck, I don't want the alarm clock to go off. So I'd try to pretend to be asleep to fool the fucking app. And waking up was the most stressful thing that ever happened to me in the morning. I'd get an immediate panic attack. So I'd prefer an orphan throwing things at my window.
No.
I had to just uninstall it eventually because I was like, I can't live like this.
Can't live with this app judging my breathing. I had an alarm. My ringtone for my alarm was Dancing in the Moonlight. And so every time that I had it for like that for like 7 years. So every time I heard the diddle da 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 da, I'd be like, yes, what? Yes, I'm going. So it got so stressed whenever it came on. I was like, we have to go. We have to go. It's like, Jess, what's wrong? It's like, I don't know. We just have to go and do some things now.
You do your wake up scream as soon as you heard it, regardless of whether or not you were awake.
Yeah, my wake up shriek, which is that I do for the morning so that the servants know that they could come in and bring me my warmed milk and pork fat. Yeah, it's like the, what is that thing where there's that a guy who's like a sleeper agent and you say the secret
Cabbages.
Word and it unlocks them.
Mm-hmm.
Cabbages. Yeah, and then they go into a red mist and kill the president. But it's Dancing in the Moonlight and it just unlocks me.
Waking up is hard shit.
It's really fucking hard. I hate it. So because it's so hard, sometimes the knocker-uppers would have their own knocker-uppers to get
God.
Them to work.
It's knocker
and I don't
inception.
Know how far that goes. Yeah, it's like, how far down does it go? How many? In fact, there's a tongue twister, which I shall perform for you now flawlessly. Edit out all the times that I don't do it flawlessly, Philippa. We had a knocker-up and our knocker-up had a knocker-up. And our knocker-up's knocker-up didn't knock our knocker-up. So our knocker-up didn't knock us up because he's not up. It's not a great tongue twister, but...
But you said it flawlessly.
I did. Flawlessly and without edited out all the times I failed. But this was a dangerous job after all.
Did people kill knocker-ups for being alarm clocks?
Maybe. Maybe. But also because it was done in all weather, all the time, sometimes really late at night as well, and it was already really dark during the rain and the snow and the other kinds of British weather. Rain.
Tornadoes.
And rain. Fog. rain. They were often women and kids as well, and usually sometimes they would become seriously ill from the exposure to the weather. And of course, Dickens can't get himself out of it. Of one of our podcasts. He loved a good knocker up.
I bet he did.
He did. He knocked her up. Joke. I did it.
Did-dum-tsh.
I did it. Did achieve joke. This next job. Are you still, you're still a sin eater slash Tosha?
Sin eater. Sin eater all the way. It sounds like I could be Voldemort's best pal.
It's just kind of the best one, isn't it? You just sit fucking down and eat.
I don't care about the job requirements. I just want sin eater on my CV.
Okay, that's fine. I don't think I'm going to sway you with my last two jobs, but I'll tell you them anyway. Mm-hmm. So this one is called a crossing sweep.
Oh.
So we know all about chimney sweeps, expertly told by Philippa in our episode entitled Dirty Dirty, tiny children who scrape off their kneecaps stuffed into carcinogenic tiny holes. But there is a different kind of sweep, the crossing sweep, which demonstrated the cheekiness and also the kind of the desperation of the Victorian poor to exploit the rich. So these kids would set a patch or like a territory and wait for a rich person to exit their carriage, stepping their delicate frames onto the filth-encrusted streets with the commoners and the unwashed masses. So the street sweeper would rush up and sweep away the filth, rats, human bones.
Leeches.
The leeches. Get them all out of there. Get them out of there. Mildred, get up. I don't care. Your trousers are wriggling and it's scaring me. Get the fuck out of here. And they would thrust them away with their like little broom. Mildred, fuck you. And thus they would keep the clothes and the shoes clean of the aristocrats and the upper class so that they didn't have to look upon the leavings of the poor. And then the crossing sweep would then beg for a tip after doing so.
That is kind of adorable, but also sad.
Yeah, because they were only kind of considered a step up from beggar. Because, you know, at least they were fucking doing something. These bloody lazy beggars just sat there. Can I have some money? Because I have no home. Why don't you sweep? I'm sorry. Why don't you just do things like sweep? Get a job is what I'm saying.
What do you want me to sweep?
Everything.
Everything.
Everything. Sweep!
And so, but their services were often gratefully received because the streets were fucking terrible and they were filled with horse manure as well because everyone's riding around in their horse and carriage and other poor people just strewn around all over the place.
Effluence, mud.
Yeah, human effluence, yes. But it was dangerous also because of all the carriages zooming around. They would have to like duck in and out of, you know, people's crinolines and the horses and shit. Sometimes they would get run over and trampled or kicked by horses and the rich. Get out of here. I'm trying to find a way to fit Steed Bonnet into every single one of our episodes now, and so yes, Steed's here. No, don't you know who I am? I'm a pirate and a barbarian aristocrat, I suppose. Anyway, get out of here. And he kicks someone. So the last job that I have is a rat catcher.
I'm guessing that is what it says on the tin.
It is. It's a rat catcher. What are you going to do?
I mean, was that a cat? Was that a job for cats?
Cats don't have jobs, Philippa. Are you insane?
We have jobs to support cats.
Rats are the size of cats. Have you seen a rat? Because they are kind of horse-sized. Anyway, so this one's kind of fun because sometimes to be a rat catcher, you would have other pets to help you. No, not cats. Cats are useless and garbage. You would have little dogs.
Animal team.
Ferrets. Because like breeds like terriers were specifically bred for catching rats. I think Russell Terriers specifically, mm-hmm. I might be wrong on that, but I know that a lot of the terrier breeds were ratting dogs, which is why they're small, they're squat, they're nippy, they're kind of like, you know, scrappy and ferocious. And ferrets as well, adorable. Oh my god, I love them. So there was a guy in my hometown that used to like walk his ferret around, and he walked into the shops in his tiny little harness. So he would just like be walking around and he had this little ferret like flowing by his side.
They are beautiful cat snakes.
Oh, I love them. Little fairy snake boy. Sometimes he would keep it in his pocket as well, so he would go into the shop and this little ferret head just poke out, have a look around, and then curl back up in his pocket. Oh my god, I love the ferret man.
a, a according to Terry Pratchett, who I take as a historical resource a lot of the time, he talks about people at carnivals who would stick a frenzied ferret down their trousers.
I think that is one of those like British mad games, like chasing the cheese down the hill, that kind of thing.
It sounds like a British thing.
I think it is. Yeah, like the Haxie Hood, which is it's the whole thing. Google it. What is this? A podcast about facts and shit?
No, history. God.
So, Ratcatcher would use a little ferret friend who I would call, I don't know, Bandit, and try and catch rats alive. Because if you caught them alive, you could take them to another job.
Oh.
A ratter. And a ratter would collect like a billion rats and then set terriers loose on them.
Ooh.
So that people could pay to watch like a tiny little gladiator arena of animal cruelty.
That saddens me, yeah.
Folk would bet to see how long a rat could last against a dog or how long it would take the dog to kill all of them. Yeah, pretty sad.
Let's go back to the rat catcher with their team of ferrets going, Captain Planet, he's a hero. And they're the one who has love as their power and can command animals, yes.
Okay, I will. But rat catching was a dangerous business. Because not only did the rats harbor a lot of diseases, but their bites could cause horrible infections. But one, this is pretty cool, one of the most famous Victorian rat catchers was Jack Black.
What? Cool.
And this is the greatest and best song in the world. So I'm not going to be able to imagine, I'm not going to be able to not imagine this guy as Kung Fu Panda, but Jack Black worked for Queen Victoria herself. And Jack Black was a royal rat catcher with ferrets.
Aww.
Are you picturing it? I hope you are. I hope you're picturing it. Anyway, Jack Black became a minor celebrity in the Victorian London streets because of his rat theatrics. He had a particular talent of sticking his hand in a cage full of rats and then withdrawing his hand with nary a bite upon it. He also had a flamboyant costume of white leather trousers, a green coat and a scarlet waistcoat with a rat belt buttle, which he made himself.
Oh, I mean, I'm imagining grown-up Jack Black in this, but still, oh
yeah. Oh. Yeah. So Black was interviewed for a book about the working class titled London, Labour and the London Poor in 1851, in which he revealed that Jack used a cage which could store up to 1,000 live rats at a time. And the rats could be stored like this for days, as long as Black fed them. Because if he forgot, the rats would begin fighting and eating each other, ruining his spoils for the games and bringing them over to the ratter. So Black nearly died 3 times from various bites. And he said to the author of the book, I've been bitten nearly everywhere, even where I can't name to you, sir.
Oh!
Ew, what were you doing with the rats? His hands were especially branded by his nemesis's ferocity. I once had the teeth of a rat break my finger. It was dreadful bad, but swollen putrefied, so that I after the broken bits pulled out with tweezers. And that's all my Victorian jobs I have for you. I feel like Sin Eater is definitely the least dangerous one by eating bread off a corpse. And also it's got the coolest name.
Well, I'm going to look for these jobs on Craigslist and nothing ill shall befall me, I'm sure.
That's right. I feel like this is where our new career lies and I feel like we've got a lot in our future. But until that point, there is our Patreon. We've got a lot of good episodes and shit, and it's good and shit. You should do it and shit. And then you should shit, and then I can collect that shit, and then I can give it to a tanner and make more money. Ew.
We'll be rolling in it. What, shit? No money.
No. I mean, maybe.
Both.
Depends what you're into. I don't want to yuck someone's yum, you know? It's fine.
Well, I guess, in addition to sin eating, some things are good sometimes.
Oh, damn, I forgot we do that.
I know, that well that you said sounded very final, and I was like, Jess. How long have we been doing this, Jess? I know you've had a week, but there are good things.
No, that's not.
It's not true at all. Fortunately for you, it's my somethings. You have to do yours in an hour when we record the next episode.
I honestly don't have one. My life is ruined.
Mine is a grim one. I don't even think I mentioned it in all the stuff that was happening, but my bunny Nelly died. This is very nice. Where it got to the point where we had to take her to the vet, and the vet told us that she probably wasn't going to make it, and then we had to go back to the vet to say goodbye, paying another £100 for another taxi. It was fine. It's all fine.
It's all fine. This is fine.
And I sat in a little field with Bun Bun, and I said goodbye, and it was very sad. And then she made it, and didn't die. And has probably cost me well over £1,000, but I still have Bun Bun. And for quite a long time, I thought that I wouldn't have her little lopsided, mismatched eyes to look into again. So that's a happy thing.
That's good, yeah.
And scowling at me for not buying the expensive kale for her.
Our pets are endless supplies of anxiety and worry that something is wrong, but also we love them a lot. So I hope all your pets are well out there, as well as you.
But mostly your pets. But also you.
But your pets are precious babies, and I hope they're all okay.
So I guess wherever eels befall us, at least we have fuzzy little animals to cling to that will struggle as we grip them tighter and tighter, whispering, I love you, into their ears.
Why don't you love me? Why don't you love me? Okay, bye.